they thought they had, or should have had, potassium chloride, which stops the heart. And they had it was a food additive or food preservative, which just shows you how broken the bloody thing is. I mean, you reach for the wrong vial. You had time to get this together. And to me, Amy, what it shows most of all is how broken the system is, because the Supreme Court has turned over to the states the administration of death. And they're not even supervising or asking accountability to them of what drugs they're using and allowing them to experiment. They got the wrong bloody vial and only at the last minute discovered that they had potassium acetate.
So what happens now? And have you spoken to Richard Glossop?
Yeah,
how
right
many times? You did speak to him. And what did he say?
Well, he was really, you can see he's losing weight. The stress is really getting to him, and he was just saying, you know, I thought this time really might be it. I was sitting in my cell. Nobody was coming. He wasn't getting any information at all, and I felt that a little bit just being with the witnesses, but much less when you're the one sitting in that cell. So what happens next? On one level, they might just clean up the protocol, get the right drugs, and say, let's go again, unless something else happens, unless the lawyers could bring the issue to the Tenth Circuit, which they did not. They went straight to the Supreme Court yesterday and just show all the new witnesses that show the complete unreliability of the man, Justin Snead, which the state themselves characterized as inherently suspect, and just show that, you know, in one of the...
We have 10 seconds.
Okay, Criminal Court of Appeals, in the dissent, one of them said this man did not have a fair trial. Obviously, there needs to be a way that the new evidence can be looked at, because this really might be an innocent man.
Sister Helen Prejean, will leave it there. One of the world's most well-known anti-death penalty activists speaking to us from Oklahoma. She was to be one of the witnesses at Richard Glossop's execution, but he was not killed. This is Democracy Now! Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Carla Wells, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guster, Amy Littlefield. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Thanks for joining us.
Today, you are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:02. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio with host Joanne Hardesty. Today we'll speak with Stanley Nelson, director of the Black Panthers' Vanguard of the Revolution, the first feature-length documentary to tell the Black Panther Party's story from beginning to end. Today's show is pre-recorded, so we will not be able to take your calls and questions.
KBOO Community Radio is seeking an individual or group to contract with to help build our next 3-year strategic plan. KBOO embodies equitable social change, shares knowledge, and fosters creativity by delivering locally rooted and diverse music, culture, news, and opinions with a commitment to the voices of oppressed and underserved communities. We've been serving the Portland community since 1968 and are one of the oldest independent community radio stations in the country. The person or group who is selected will co-lead the development of a strategic plan with the KBOO Strategic Planning Support Work Group, made up of volunteers, board members, and staff. More details about the application process can be found at kboo.fm/planrfp2015.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to present an evening of music and dialogue on the climate and jobs crisis Saturday, October 10th at 6:30 p.m. Joe Euline is a labor leader who will discuss the urgency and the climate crisis and the response that must be made in carbon neutral work, education, and more. Again, that's an evening of music and dialogue on the climate and job crisis Saturday, October 10th, 6:30 p.m. at the AFL-CIO Hall at 3645 Southeast 32nd Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
12 months of bribery, 12 months
This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market. From our hands to yours. Celebrating 42 years of American arts and crafts, freshly prepared foods with an international flavor, and local music every Saturday and Sunday through Christmas Eve. Local artisans, international food, live music, PortlandSaturdayMarket.com.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get
up, stand up. Good morning, this is Joanne Hardesty, and you're listening to Voices from the Edge. It is my privilege today to be interviewing Mr. Stanley Nelson Jr., who is, there's so much I could say about him, but I'm going to keep this short because I want to spend some quality time interviewing him. Stanley Nelson is the co-founder and executive director of Firelight Films and co-founder of Firelight Media, which provides grants and technical support to emerging documentarians. Firelight is one of 9 nonprofit organizations around the world to receive the 2015 MacArthur Award for Creative and Effective Institutions. The award recognizes exceptional nonprofit organizations which have demonstrated creativity and impact and invest in the long-term sustainability with sizable one-time grants. With 35 films and multiple industry awards to his credit, Mr. Nelson is acknowledged as one of the premier documentary filmmakers working today. He has a clear, vibrant, and consistent voice, creating evocative films which document issues of social injustice. His films have earned 5 Primetime Emmys, 2 awards from the Sundance Film Festival, and 2 Peabodys, among other honors. Welcome to the program, Mr. Stanley Nelson. It's a pleasure to have you here.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks.
Thank you. And I want to be one of the first to congratulate you on your newest award, Hamptons Take Two Documentary Film Festival, will take place December 3rd through 6th in Sag Harbor, New York. And you will be honored with a Lifetime Achievement Award. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. You are actually the first to mention that award. So thanks again.
You are very welcome. You have a long, distinguished history at telling stories that we all think we know, but B, more importantly, that really tell the human stories behind your documentary films. Why did you decide that you wanted to be a documentary filmmaker as compared to any other films you could have produced?
Well, I don't know if I ever really decided that. It might have been decided for me. I went to film school a long time ago at City College in New York City, and I got out, and I was looking for work, and I happened to get a job with William Greaves Production, who was one of the first African-American documentary filmmakers, and that's what he did. He made documentaries, and so I started working for him and kind of fell into it, and have made documentaries for the rest of my career.
And some impressive documentaries you have made over the years. I know that there is just a long list, and I'll get to the Black Panthers, Vanguard of the Revolution. I'm excited that we're going to have an advanced screening here in Portland on October 8th at the Hollywood Theater, and I am thrilled that we're going to be able to be one of the first people to see it here in the Portland metropolitan area. But I want our listeners to also know that you produce Jonestown, The Life and Jonestown. You produce Freedom Riders and Freedom Summer, the Black Press Soldiers as well. So as you said, you've been doing this for a very, very long time. And what I love is that you are currently helping new documentary filmmakers get started. Why?
Well, you know, I came up making films and started my film career in the 70s. And at that time, there were a number of programs, some of them funded by the government, some of them not. that were helping people break into filmmaking. And most of those programs are gone. You know, we're in a different era now, and then those programs are gone. So we were looking around and think about how do you help other documentary filmmakers get their films done. And one of the things that I was doing, and other documentary filmmakers were doing, were kind of mentoring other filmmakers. And we wanted to see if there was a way to institutionalize that, to really make something that was there and lasting, rather than just me as an individual and other filmmakers as an individual. And individuals helping out filmmakers. So we started the Firelight Media Producers Lab, and we've been going on for, 5 or 6 years now. And to great success. We've had probably 15, 16 films that have come out of the lab that have been on television. And I'm talking about, these are all, an hour or an hour and a half films. These are really major films. We've been in all the different festivals with the films. And hopefully we've helped start people's careers. And that's what we're trying to do. Trying to get, more diversity, more people of color into the documentary film industry.
That is absolutely wonderful. And I know that you've done some work in universities as well, helping young people prepare for a film career, and not just in the United States. Did I read that you also have taught in Africa?
Yeah, I mean, I've been very fortunate to have different kinds of teaching opportunities. I taught a course for just a couple of weeks in Rwanda, kind of a year or two after the genocide there in Rwanda, and so many people who worked at the TV station as reporters and producers and directors had been killed, and so they really needed to train a whole new cadre of people to do the news,
And right.
So I went over there with a group of people that were working with the State Department, I think it was, to teach kind of basic journalistic practices there. And so that was an exciting opportunity for me. I'm actually, this year, I'm teaching at Morgan State University, traditionally historic black college in Baltimore.
Yes, my hometown.
Started in the winter term, and I'm teaching the fall term at Morgan State. I'm teaching documentary film production there.
Oh, wonderful. I wish I was in Baltimore to sign up for your class. That's my home, but I'll let folks know that you will be there. If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Stanley Nelson, world-renowned filmmaker, whose latest film, Black Panthers, The Vanguard of the Revolution, will have a special premiere October 8th at the Hollywood Theater. There's a Facebook events page that you can go to if you'd like to attend this special screening. In addition, it will be at the Hollywood Theater for a week. Now, Mr. Nelson, you've been traveling all over the country at the premieres of the opening of the Black Panthers film. What has it been like to be in the audience when people are watching this film for the first time?
It's been great. I mean, the reception to the film has just been incredible. We've been... So I think every single theater that we've opened in, the run has been extended.
Wonderful.
So, we opened in the Film Forum in New York, which is kind of the number one art house theater here in New York City, where I am. And it was originally a 2-week run, and after the first night, they extended it for another 2 weeks. So that means we had a 4-week run there. We then went to the Magic Johnson Theater on 125th Street at the same time, actually, but we started a week later there, and they extended it, and we went to Boston, they extended it. We just opened up last Friday in Baltimore and Philly and Santa Fe and Washington, D.C., and they all extended their runs for another week.
Wonderful.
So it's been great. I mean, we've been filling theaters and we've been traveling around. I've been traveling around. The other producer of the film, Lorenz Grant, has been traveling around. We have guests at a lot of the screenings, former Panthers or young people who are working in, Black Lives Matter, Million Hoodies, other different organizations. And we've just been having great discussions about the film. And so for me, it's been really exciting to, you know, see people, you know, in the theaters.
Yes, yes, I absolutely agree. And we're just chomping at the bits to have it here. And I'm excited of the partnership that we have with Hollywood Theater to make that happen. What you mentioned, the Black Lives Matters and Black Panthers, we're going to do the same here. We have a couple of retired Black Panthers who live here in Portland who will be at our premiere, as well as some representatives from the Black Lives Matters movement. So we plan to have a lively discussion when the film is over. And you mentioned Black Lives Matter, and I do want to go back, because to me there's really a parallel between the Black Panther Party of the 60s, of the early 60s, and the Black Lives Movement of today. Do you share that perspective? And if so, how?
Well, I mean, I think there definitely is a parallel. You know, the Black Panthers started in 1966 in Oakland, California, as a result of the brutal police violence that was taking place in Oakland. And, you know, this was their way that they felt to defend the African-American community. And what they did was started policing the police, because at that point in California, you were allowed to carry a loaded weapon as long as you carried it out in the open.
Right.
So the Panthers would kind of drive behind the police, and when the police jumped out to stop somebody, the Panthers would also jump out with their guns drawn. These were loaded weapons because it was legal. They'd stand a distance back from the police to make sure, you know, the police had room to operate, but they would stand there and observe the police, and as they put it, to make sure that no brutality occurred, you know, at the hands of the police.
Right.
And that was the Panthers' first action. So, you know, obviously that has parallels with today, with not the tactic exactly, but, you know, with Black Lives Matter. We're still in a place where we're fighting as an African-American community against police brutality.
Absolutely true. And I'm curious whether you learned anything new about the Black Panthers while you were making the documentary that you didn't know.
Well, I learned, you know, so many things about the Panthers, so many new things. I mean, you know, I learned, you know, that how young the Panthers were. That,
yes.
That we don't really usually think of the fact that the Panthers were teenagers.
Yes.
The average age was like 19 or 20.
Yes.
So these were kids, you know, in the party.
Yes.
One person says in the film, you know, the Panthers, by the early 70s, the majority of Black Panthers were women.
Yes.
That's something that we never think about, you know. About Black Panthers, we think about the kind of
Stokely Carmichael,
gray, you know,
right.
Mean and stuff. But no, the Panthers are very different than that.
Yes.
I think one of the things you also see in the film is how much the Panthers made coalitions with other groups. That, you know, there were coalitions with you know, white groups, with Latino groups, with Asian groups, with women's groups. You know, that the Panthers were not this kind of isolated entity, that they made very many coalitions with other groups. And I think you know, the other thing that is very clear, and we talk about a lot in the film, is the FBI and how the FBI went after the Panthers and went after the Panthers to destroy the Panthers.
Yes.
And were, you know, partially responsible for the destruction of the Black Panther Party, and how J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI documented that. You know, it's not, these aren't rumors, you know, these are actual FBI documents that we use in the film, that some we got through the Freedom of Information Act. That we have to destroy the party. We have to pit Eldridge Cleaver against Huey Newton. They have one document where they say we have to figure out how to pit spouse against spouse, and cause these internal conflicts in the Black Panther Party. So not only was the FBI infiltrating the Panthers, not only did they have, you know, informers, you know, all throughout the Panther Party, but they were also using these informers and using other tactics to pit Panthers against Panthers and try to destroy the party from within.
Wow. And it sounds a lot like what may be happening today with Black Lives Matters. I read recently that the FBI, since Ferguson, has been monitoring and tracking Black Lives Matter activists. And of course, we know of the sister who died in jail under suspicious circumstances that was part of the Black Lives Matters movement. And so I think that we are reliving our history almost, not with the same tactics, but certainly fighting against the same injustices that your film so displays so effectively.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the most amazing things, you know, about the Panther movement is that, you know, in the film we talk about the 10-point program, which included things like, you know, we want to end to police brutality.
Right.
You know, we want better housing for our people. We want full employment for our people. You know, every single point of the 10-point program, you know, you could argue for today.
Yes.
None of those things have been realized. You know, this is 50 years later. I mean, the Panthers started in 1966. So, you know, we're still fighting those same battles today.
We absolutely are. And if you're just joining the conversation, I am interviewing Mr. Stanley Nelson. He is the producer of the new film, The Black Panthers, Vanguard of the Revolution. You will have the opportunity to see it here in Portland, Oregon, starting on October 8th, where there will be a special screening for the NAACP Portland branch. We hope to see you there. Your family, do you have, I know you have a daughter. How old is your daughter?
I have three children.
Okay.
I have a daughter who's 25 and twins who are 16.
Huh. And I'm curious as to how they have viewed the films that you have developed over their lifetime.
I think that, you know, they have been very supportive of the films. One of the things that that I've tried to do always is give the films a pacing and a quality that young people can understand and get
mm-hmm.
into.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these films aren't hopefully just history pieces, but they're pieces about our lives today. And so I really want young people to see these films and understand these films and get into these films. So
and are you
spend a lot of time trying to give these films a rhythm and a pacing that
right.
that young people can understand.
And are you surprised to find out how few people really know and understand that our history?
No. I think that, you know, for whatever reason, you know, it history seems like it's you know, getting further into the past quicker than it used to. So, you know,
yes.
you know, I know that, you know, you listen to the radio and they'll start talking about, okay, we're playing oldies. And these are songs that were probably 5 years ago.
Yeah, right.
You know, oldies used to be, you know, 20, 30 years ago. I think for us, you know, history is you know, something that's 2 or 3 years ago. I don't know. I mean, I think that, you know, there's so much more distraction.
Yes.
That's going on, you know, now that it's hard to kind of, you know, think about the past in the same way that you know, that my generation did. But you know, we show the Panther, we get a lot of young people. You know, we had a screening last night in Philadelphia. And you know, we're standing there, and all of a sudden, you know, we look up at the escalator, and 75 kids are coming, who not kids, but you know, college students,
right.
It was like the Black Student African American Student Union had bought 75 tickets for the film.
Wonderful.
You know, and here comes 75 black kids, you know, to watch the film. And we had a great discussion with them, and you know, afterwards. So, you know, that's been happening everywhere. We get a real mix of older people and younger people. And yeah, this is it's a theatrical release, you know. It's just out there, like,
yes.
You know, Mission Impossible.
Right.
Stuff. And so people,
well, that's exciting.
You know, they choose to buy tickets. They've chosen to come see the Black Panthers.
Right.
And we get a lot of young people, a lot of young people who come.
Well, I think that they're coming because they need to understand their history, and we haven't done a very effective job of really passing down that history to the next generation. It amazes me many times talking to young people how limited their understanding of the civil rights movement is. I mean, we all hear of Rosa Parks. We all hear about Dr. Martin Luther King. But Emmett Till is a perfect example of when I talk to young people and I say, do you know who Emmett Till was? And most don't. And so your films are vital, I think, to help not just our kids, but America to really understand our history.
Well, I agree that you know that the more we tell our history, the better off we are. And I think that you know the trick for me as a filmmaker who's done a number of historical films mm-hmm. is how do you do that and make these stories entertaining?
Yes.
You know, how do you make it so that you're not saying to people, okay, you know, come on, sit down, take your medicine, here's
right.
your history,
right.
But that it's something that's vibrant, real, and alive, and that's what we're trying to do. And you know, we're making entertainment on one level also. It's not only these aren't only histories, but they're also entertainment. And I think that you know, the Black Panther film is hugely, hugely entertaining. You know, we've sold out every night at Film Forum for 2.5 straight weeks.
Fabulous.
Every 7:15 screening has sold out. And that's for 2.5 weeks. You know, and these are people who, so a lot of people are you know, Black people who might have been around who have an interest in it. A lot of white people who might have an interest. A lot of young white people, a lot of young Black people.
Right.
And I think people are buying the tickets and coming to the theater because they've heard it's, you know, not only a historical film, but an interesting film.
And a good film.
Yeah, that's
yes.
what we're trying to do, hopefully.
Wonderful. And so let's talk a little bit about the organization that you co-founded, Firelight Media. Talk a little bit about the support that you provide to emerging documentarians.
Well, we work with about 20 documentary filmmakers at any one time, trying to get their films, you know, done, completed, and on the air. And it's the basis of it is a mentorship program where we look at films, people who come, you know, have a project that they're already, you know, in the middle of or are getting into, or sometimes they're near the end, but they have a project that they're working on. It's a very rigorous application process. I could say for anybody who thinks it's a national program, so
okay.
but it is for people of color.
Right.
Anybody who's thinking of being part of it, you can go to firelightmedia.org, which is our website,
okay.
firelightmedia.org, and then you know you click on Producers Lab. And it tells you more information. It's a rigorous process, you know. We can't take everybody. We can only work with 20 filmmakers at a time, and it's a rolling application process. You can apply at any time. We look at your work. We look at who you are. We try to assess whether we think that we can help and get this film on the air, and it's something people want to see. And if it is, you know, we accept you to the lab, and then we we'll talk and look and think about, you know, what kind of mentor you need.
Right.
So sometimes people come and they have a project, and we say, you know, this is a great idea. You know, they might have a sample reel, they have something which is a great idea, but your proposal is really not written that well. You need a writing mentor to
right.
help you know, write a proposal that is really good. Sometimes we'll look at the sample reel, say your proposal is great, but your sample reel is really not that great. You need to have a better sample reel if you're going to show this to people and try to get them to give you money and put this thing on the air. So we might, you know, help you do a better sample reel. Sometimes we say, you know, you need a seasoned producer just to talk to and help and help you get to the next stage. And that's what we might provide. So, you know, it really depends on the project.
Mm-hmm.
It is kind of based on this mentorship model.
Mm-hmm.
But we've been hugely successful. As I might have said, we've had 15, 16 films on in the last few years, and we've been to almost every major festival and won a whole bunch of awards for the filmmakers. And you know, the filmmakers, they never pay for any of these services, and you know, we never ask filmmakers for any kind of money. We raise grants to support the lab, and we've been fairly successful in doing that, and it's work. You know, the model and the mission is that, you know, film will help a filmmaker get a film made, and, you know, that filmmaker will then hire, you know, an associate producer,
right,
and an editor,
right,
and, you know, maybe some interns, you know,
right,
and all those people. Maybe some of those people will also be of color, and that you start then, you know, getting more people credits, getting more people in the industry, getting more people, as we say, who can buy their groceries and pay their rent,
yes,
for making documentary films. That's our mission.
And you have had such a long history. I'm curious as to, has it become easier for you to sell a film project now than, say, 20 years ago?
You know, it's become easier to raise money to make to do the work that I'm doing. I mean, it in no way is easy.
You know,
it probably took 7 years or so to make the Black Panthers vanguard of the revolution. You know, from the time, you know, I first had the idea to you know, writing the first proposal,
right,
to actually, you know, film hitting the screen. You know, and maybe 4 of those years we're trying to raise money and,
right,
and figuring out how to, you know, put the money in place to get the film made, and another 3 years in production or so. You know, but you know, it's not simple, you know, getting films made, but
right,
I guess, you know, it's gotten a little bit easier. Yeah.
Well, I would suspect your reputation kind of precedes you now, right? So when you walk in, you don't have to quite sell yourself as much.
No, but I can say that people are calling me on the phone throwing money at me.
Yeah, right. Not having that experience yet, right?
No. You know, the calls are few and far between, you know, when somebody calls and says, hey, we want you to...
We got money for you.
And they actually really do have money.
Right.
I get a lot of calls where people don't really have the money.
Right.
But, you know, that's okay. I mean, I've been incredibly fortunate, you know, to be able to make the number of films that I've been able to make, and to work on the projects that I've worked on. You know, these are projects that are all very, very dear to my heart. You know,
yes,
they're not like I'm making aspirin commercials.
Right.
You know? I'm making films that I think are important.
I couldn't agree more. And so I'm curious what you have in the pipeline. What is it that you're working on now?
Well, the Black Panthers Vanguard of the Revolution is part of a very kind of loosely knitted 3-part series that we're working on.
Oh.
For PBS, for public television. And so Vanguard of the Revolution is first, and then we're working on a film now that we've started a couple months ago on historic Black colleges and universities.
Oh.
And how historic Black colleges and universities have changed America.
Yes.
And so we're in the production on that, and then we're working, the next film we'll do is a film about the Atlantic slave trade.
And,
it's very different from most of the films, mm-hmm, that have been done, because it's not about slavery in the United States, but it's about the trade.
Right.
What was the trade, and what was this business like, and how did this business work? And so look forward to working on that. You know,
As do we. We certainly look forward to hearing more about that. If you're just joining us, this is Voices from the Edge. I'm Joanne Hardesty. I am talking with Stanley Nelson Jr., a world-renowned filmmaker, and we're talking about, among other things, his latest film, The Black Panthers, Vanguard of the Revolution, which will have a special screening premiere October 8th at the Hollywood Theater in Northeast Portland. For more information, you can go to Facebook, and there is a Facebook events page for that event. And this is KBOO Portland, 90.7 on the FM dial. And so, Mr. Nelson, what advice would you give to people who are thinking about becoming filmmakers, documentary filmmakers especially?
Let's see, that's a hard one. I mean, I think that there's so many different ways into it, you know, that, you know, the best thing I can say is kind of what I did, you know, because That's what I know. I mean, I went to film school, right, you know, at City College in, right, New York City, which was at that point pretty much free to go, you know. So I went to City College Film School, and I think, you know, I found that I really, you know, liked making films and liked the process. I think that's really central, you know, to make sure that you like the process of making films, you know, because the time that I spend, you know, or documentary filmmakers spend kind of, you know, in front of an audience, you know, receiving applause is very, very small.
Right.
You know, our lives are spent, you know, on the phone or on the computer or in the edit room or, you know, trying to get these films launched and then, you know, editing the films. So, you know, I think that's really important. I think the other thing is, I would say to anybody who wants to get into it, is learn as much as you possibly can about the equipment. Mm-hmm. I think the equipment is very, very essential, you know, now. And the equipment has become lighter, smaller, easier to use. You know, it doesn't take a brain scientist to figure it out, you know, and the more skills you have, the better. You know, when I got out of film school, I worked as, I did a lot of sound. I was a sound engineer. I did assistant editing. I did assistant camera. You know, I did associate producing and assistant producing. You know, so I kind of got all these skills, you know, and I learned something, you know, from each stage of doing those things. So it became really important once I started to direct, you know, I understood sound in a different way. I understood editing in a different way because I had worked, you know, as an assistant editor and as an editor. So,
well,
I think the more, you know, skills you have, you know, the more you learn the equipment and the more you learn that you love it, and then also see a lot of documentaries. You know, when I grew up, when I was getting out of film school, when I went to film school, you know, we didn't even have videotape. You know, we had to, the only time you saw a film is if somebody, you know, the teacher brought rented a 16mm film and brought it to the classroom, or if it was playing in the art house, you know, downtown, you could go see it, but you couldn't see it, you know, or if it came on television just by accident, but you couldn't say, hey, you know, I want to see Eyes on the Prize, or I want to see The Murder of Emmett Till, or you know, and then see it, you had to, you know, it had to be playing somewhere. But now you could very easily say, you know, I want to see all the films that were all the documentaries that were nominated for the Academy Award,
yes,
in 1989.
Right.
And you could find those films online. You can look at them all, you know. Or I want to see all the film. I want to look at the last 10 films that won the Grand Jury Prize at Sundance Film Festival or Tribeca or whatever. You know, you could get online. You could look at that. If you really want to make films, if you really want to make documentary films, then that's what you should be doing. You know, and I'm not saying that because the films were nominated for the Academy Award or because they won at Sundance or whatever, that makes them the greatest films in the world. But it makes it, at least you say, somebody liked it a real lot. You know,
somebody
liked it a real lot for it to pass that test. So, you know, it's good to watch and say, well, you know, let me see why people like these films. Why? What is it about films? You know, let me see different techniques, different ways that films are made.
That sounds like excellent advice, and what I hear you saying is that you worked every component of filmmaking before you officially became a filmmaker, that you actually spent the time educating yourself.
That the more you learn the different phases of film, you know, the more control you have, you know, when it's time to direct your own film. You know, is that, you know, making a film is more than a notion.
Mm.
It's more than a notion. You know, you have to make thousands and thousands of decisions.
Yes.
You know, in making a film. You know, where am I going to put the camera? You know, what's the sound going to be like? You know, what kind of camera do I want to use?
Right.
Well, what kind of lighting do I want? You know, do I want to, you know, do some kind of a special effect? You know, all of these things you have to kind of try to figure out, and you know, you make informed choices by what you know. So the more you know and the more you understand, the better those choices can be.
That sounds like very sage advice indeed. For those who've just joined us, I am talking with Stanley Nelson Jr. He is a world-renowned filmmaker. He's got all kind of awards, whether you're talking Emmys, MacArthur Genius Fellow, and we are talking about the latest film that's now premiering all over the country, Black Panthers, Vanguard of the Revolution. And we will be hosting a screening on October 8th at the Hollywood Theater starting at 7 p.m. You can go to Facebook Events and find that page and get your ticket. One question that I have, and I know that this will probably come up after people have had an opportunity here to see the film. People will learn things that they didn't know about the Black Panthers film, and hopefully we learn how to protect the Black Lives Matters movement after people have been exposed to the film, because I think the more people who understand what the FBI's role was in eliminating the Black Panther Party, the better the community will be informed about how do we show support and embrace the Black Lives Matters movement. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of lessons to be learned, you know, from the film, from the Panthers, you know, both right and wrong. You know, they made mistakes, and I think that's one of the things that the film clearly talks about and shows. And I think they did a lot of things, you know, right, and there's a lot of positive things that can be learned from the film. And I hope that, you know, Black Lives Matter and other movements that are going on today can use those lessons.
I hope they can too. I'm always fearful when, of course, people are under attack especially by law enforcement, because that's, you know, it's one of the institutions in our community that are supposed to protect and serve. And so it's my hope. I'm looking forward to the conversation because I know that there. Well, let me ask you: have you heard that there's a disagreement between the Black Lives Matter movement and other advocacy organizations that are working on reforming police around the country as you've been traveling?
I not really. I mean, I've heard rumors of stuff, but I'm like so crazed with kind of traveling around the country with this film. I haven't really had a chance to kind of study it and know what's going on, but I've heard, you know. But I think that that's one of the lessons in the film is that, you know, part of what happened to the Panthers is that they were torn apart by different, you know, personality conflicts. And, you know, one of the things that hopefully the film will help people do is, you know, avoid those things.
Yes. Yes, and I think that's always the challenge when you're organizing against institutions. You mentioned a little bit earlier that the Black Panther Party, so it's like 50 years since the beginning, started in 1966. And so if you think about that 50-year history and what the Black Panthers stood for, is exactly the same things that the March on Washington were about. Right, whether you're talking police brutality, jobs, education, housing, healthcare. When I look at the Black Panthers agenda, and then I look at the civil rights movement agenda, they basically had the exact same agenda. I think the only difference was one said we're gonna only practice nonviolence resistance, and then the Black Panthers said we're gonna protect our community. If you're not gonna protect our community, we are. Did you find that to be so as you were doing research?
I think that, you know, yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, you could look at the Panthers as kind of an outgrowth of the traditional civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
I would agree with you that, you know, a lot of the, it was the tactics that were different.
Yes.
And I think that's really, you know, important to understand. So, yeah, I think there were a lot of similarities between the two movements. And, yeah.
Wonderful. So anything else that I should ask you that I didn't, that my listeners, if they knew this, they would just flock to the movie theater because they're going to see something that is unique?
Yeah, you see the movie, it's going to change your life.
I love it.
I think the film, you know, the film is hugely entertaining. You know, we've been getting, you know, standing ovations, you know,
wonderful.
Everywhere we go. You know, we use a lot of music from the period, a lot of music that some people haven't heard. We really wanted also to give you a feeling of the time, you know, not only to see the Panther story, but also to feel it, you know, to really feel what it meant to be a Black Panther and what it was like to be alive at that time.
Right.
We also not only, we interview a lot of Panthers, we wanted the film to be not only the traditional, you know, story, but we wanted it to be a story of what was called the rank and file.
Right. That's
like the everyday man and woman who was part of the Black Panther Party.
Right.
So we interview, we probably interviewed 30 or so, you know, people who were part of the Panther movement, both men and women.
Wow.
And we really wanted it not to be just about the people who were in the leadership, but also, you know, give a feeling like what it meant. Why did you join the Panther Party? What did you do from day to day? You know, why did you leave? We have these incredible letters that people wrote, exit letters, you know, where
right.
they write, "Dear Huey, you know, I have to leave the party now because I'm not spending enough time with my children."
Right.
And so on, you know, just
right.
really beautiful letters that we were able to obtain that give the film another dimension. You know, the footage and the pictures that we have, you know, footage that people have never seen before and pictures that nobody's ever seen before. We've probably shown the film to 150, 200 Panthers, and you know, every screening we have, they come up afterwards and like, "Where did you get those pictures?" And I'm like, "Well, I haven't seen everything.
Wow.
I never saw those pictures before."
Wonderful.
So we really want to give a, you know, we have beautiful picture, and we want to give a sense of that and footage that nobody's ever seen before that we collected. So, you know, I think it's not only an enlightening film, but it's an entertaining film.
Mm-hmm.
We interview not only Panthers, we interview former FBI agents, we interview former cops about, you know, how they saw it. We interview police informants who talk about, you know, their work in informing on the Panthers. So all those things are kind of rolled into this film that, again, it's been just, you know, going great. I mean, you know, everywhere we've played so far, we've been held over. And it's amazing to see after the first night, you know, a couple of Panthers came over to me in New York and hugged me and said, you know, "Hey, we never thought we'd ever see an audience give us a standing ovation, you know, for being Black Panthers."
Right.
Like, yeah, that's kind of,
well,
that means that they really kind of got the film.
That's
and
right.
seen this whole movement in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
That's really important for us.
Well, wonderful. And it's so few of them left. How wonderful that they can see themselves reflected in a film that really tells their story authentically. I want to ask you, I've only got a few minutes. I'm sorry, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I mean, you were talking about that. You know, 5 people that we interviewed in the film have passed away, you know, in the 2 years since we, you know, shot the interviews.
Right.
You know, Julian Bond, you know, the
yes.
Civil rights leader, was one person that we interviewed in the film who's passed away. But, you know, 4 others have passed away. And so, you know, it's really, you know, timely to tell this story. And hopefully we got it right, because, again, so many people are getting older and we're losing them.
You know what surprises me as I look through this long list of films that you've done over the years is that you have really you've set your sights on so many different areas of the American experience. And like, for example, Wounded Knee, you did a 3-part series on immigration. You've done a story about Marcus Garvey. Then story about Puerto Rico, Schools for a New Society is another one. I'm really impressed with the breadth of your filmmaking experience. And so I know we don't have a lot of time left, but I want to end talking a little bit about Jonestown, the life and death of the People's Temple. You made that back in 2006. And I'm curious about, again, is one of those like, wow, you really made a documentary about that? What compelled you to tell that story?
Well, I think that Jonestown, you know, is just, and Jim Jones is just an incredible story.
Yes.
You know, People's Temple was probably 80% African American.
Yes.
It's just an incredible story. I think it started when I heard, you know, people, former members of People's Temple on the radio. It was maybe the, I don't know, 40th anniversary or something
right.
like that, 30th anniversary maybe. And they were talking about how, you know, they were talking about their experience within the church as was something very different than, you know, we came to know about it. You know,
right.
Everybody came to know about it as this, all these crazy people who committed suicide.
Right, right.
You know, and they were talking about this totally different thing. They were talking about it as, we were a group that loved each other, and that's who we were. We loved each other, and it was so different, you know, from what we had heard. And we were a very socially active church. You know,
right.
We were active in local politics, and we wanted to change the world. So, yeah, that's kind of how I came to the story, and thought it would make an interesting film, and. It did.
I'm looking forward to reading that. Now that I've read up on you, there's a lot of films that I realize I'm going to have to go to Redbox and find.
That'd be great. Yeah,
I am looking for
you think about them.
Yes, yes. I will certainly do that. It has been such a pleasure talking with you today. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. I know how busy you're traveling all over the country for premieres of The Black Panthers, Vanguard of the Revolution. I want to thank you very, very much for talking with us today. And I certainly look forward to our premiere here. So I will remind my listeners that on October 8th at the Hollywood Theater in Northeast Portland, we will be showing the Black Panthers film, Vanguard of the Revolution. And we invite you to join us. We'll also have former Black Panthers and representatives of Black Lives Matters for a talk back after the program. This is Joanne.
Sounds like such a great program. I should also say one more thing, if I
okay.
can.
Yes.
For people, if you want more information about, you know, screenings mm-hmm. in other parts of the country and screening times or what's going on with the film, if you go to theblackpanthers.com, that's our website for
okay.
the film, theblackpanthers.com, you can find out all information about screenings, the trailer, you can see the trailer for the film. All of that is up there, so I encourage people to do that.
Well, wonderful. And I encourage people to do that as well. And I will also post that on both our Facebook and our website page for Voices from the Edge on KBOO. Thank you so much, Mr. Nelson. I really appreciate your time. And thank you so much for telling the story of our history in such an eloquent way.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been so nice.
It's been my pleasure. You have a great day.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye now. And so I have just finished my interview with Stanley Nelson Jr., and what a fabulous, fabulous interview that was. I am now joined by Don Smallwood, who is the special events coordinator for Hollywood Theater, and she's going to talk to us about what you can expect at the special screening. Welcome to the program, Don.
Hi, Joanne. Thanks for inviting me.
It's a pleasure to have you here. And so tell my audience, what can they expect when they come to the Hollywood Theater on October 8th?
Well, at 7 p.m. on that night, we're going to have the Portland premiere of The Black Panthers, Vanguard of the Revolution, a fantastic new film by Stanley Nelson Jr. We're excited to be showing it. This is an advanced screening. It opens for its week-long run the night after. But at the advanced screening, we're having it as a benefit for the NAACP Portland branch. And so all the box office proceeds that come to the Hollywood Theater will be turned over to the NAACP in support of all the great work they're doing. You're doing.
Yeah. Thank you. I know. It's like I couldn't interview myself, so I'm so glad I get the opportunity to interview you about this. And let me just say how much the NAACP Portland branch really appreciates this partnership with Hollywood Theater. And so we're going to have an auction. We're going to have a talk back. We're going to have former Black Panthers in the audience. We're going to have members of Black Lives Matters. And so it's it's going to be one of those kind of once-in-a-lifetime opportunity evenings.
Yeah, we're really excited about it, to take the film, an important film like this, and be able to show it and then have people in the community who are working on those same issues that are presented, even though this is a historical film of things that happened decades earlier. There's current voices of the original Black Panther Party in the film talking about where that movement has led to now. And then we're going to continue that conversation once the film's over and the lights come up, and you're going to be moderating a panel, and we've got a great group of people to talk about why this film is still relevant, why the movement is currently relevant, and what are similar challenges that the community is still facing today that they were facing back then.
And it is kind of amazing. As I was talking to Stanley Nelson Jr., I was really just impacted by the interconnectedness of the Black Panthers movement with the Black Lives Matters movement. And you're absolutely right. He was very eloquent in actually talking about really seeing the parallel of what took place. I think one of the things that he mentioned is that one of the biggest surprises is just how involved the FBI was in actually trying to stop the Black Panthers from operating. And ironically, since Ferguson, the FBI has been actually tracking activities and actions of the Black Lives Matters movement. And so history repeats itself again. Tell me a little bit about Hollywood Theater's partnership with community groups. I love the fact that we're going to have this partnership with the NAACP Portland branch, but I suspect you partner with other folks and do other things as well.
We do. We're actually, the theater is a nonprofit. And when that model changed and it went from being a standard movie theater to a nonprofit, the mission changed. And so we have a mission for programming for a diversity of different groups, different people, different interests, different concerns in the community. There's ways that you can access the theater through our venue access program for community groups to do their own programming. But we also host a number of things in our own programming. We do the Portland Black Film Festival, Movies in Black and White, which if folks don't know about is really interesting. We show films and then we have conversations about race afterwards with panels about the film, which is really great programming. And we show Cinescopia, which is Latin American classic cinema. So there's a number of different things to serve the community. And then we do interesting individual events like this benefit that we're doing with you. And I'd love to plug our sponsors if that's
absolutely
an okay thing. We're really, a number of people have donated in different ways, including our raffle. So we hope folks will come out. We've got great prizes to raise more funds that night. But we'd like to thank The Scanner, In Focus, the Oregon Historical Society, and Radiant Family Dentistry, because they really stepped up and provided us some wonderful support for our event. So thank you to them.
Yes, absolutely. It's always good to thank sponsors over and over and over and over again. One of the things that I love about this effort is, I should just say, that it's been so easy to work with the Hollywood Theater. You know, as somebody who is a volunteer, who is, you know, trying to rebuild a civil rights organization in this era, it is really inspiring to know that there are businesses in our community who just want to help. I mean, I met you your second day on the job, and you were like, how can I help? That was your first question. And I just think that's pretty phenomenal. So I just want to take this time to really thank the Hollywood Theater and thank you personally, Dawn, because, you know, I mean, from the beginning, you've been like, what can I do to help? What can I do?
Well, thank you back at you, Joanne, because we're nothing without our community. And you know, everybody loves going to the movies. And so we have a vision of how that can be fun. But we also have a vision at the Hollywood Theater of how that can actually make positive changes or give positive support in the community. So that's a two-sided deal, so it doesn't work if it's just us. Thank you for being the other half of that equation.
You are very, very, very welcome. So we want to take a time again, because we've just got 2 minutes left, and want to make sure that we remind folks that this advanced screening will take place on October 8th, starting at 7 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater, and it will start with an auction. We will watch the movie, and then we'll have a talk back afterwards. And it's just going to be a fabulous event. And there is a Facebook page, right?
Well, there's you can go on the Hollywood Theater's Facebook page. The Hollywood Theater's website is also a great place, and that's www.hollywoodtheater.org. And theater is spelled the old-fashioned way, theatre.org. And you can find it at the film. It's called The Black Panthers, Vanguard of the Revolution. And it's also, you can find it through the calendar on the page, October 8th at 7 p.m. Tickets are available both online and at the box office if you want to come in the evenings. The box office generally opens about 6:30 p.m.
Wonderful. And I will also say that information is available on the NAACP Portland's website and Facebook page as well. And the NAACP's website is portlandnaacp1120.org or the Facebook page, PDX NAACP. I want to thank you so much, Dawn. It has been such a pleasure talking to you. And I can't wait to October 8th.
It's going to be fun. Thanks,
Joanne. It's going to be fun. Thank you.
Hope to see folks that night.
Absolutely. This has been Voices from the Edge. See you next week, same time, same place, same station. Have a great day.
Get up, stand up. Stand up.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 9 o'clock. If you missed Joanne Hardesty's keynote address at KBOO's annual meeting last Sunday, or if you want to hear it again, we will air that speech tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock on KBOO.
It's an all that Peter is gold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on, get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
And good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio station. Just about 9 o'clock here on this Thursday morning, and we're a half hour away from Per Fagering and Fight the Empire. That's at 9:30 this morning. And today, Per speaks with investigative journalist Robert Perry of Consortium News about Vladimir Putin, Syria, and the groupthink in Washington. At 10 o'clock, hear Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. And then at 10:15, it'll be Flashpoints, today featuring a powerful new speech given this week in Berkeley by journalist, activist, and political analyst Phyllis Bennis. At 11 on Between the Covers, host David Naiman speaks with legendary local writer Ursula K. Le Guin about the new edition of her book, Steering Craft, a 21st Century Guide to Sailing the Sea of Story. And at 11:30 on Black Book Talk, the guest is Robin Costa-Lewis, whose new collection of poems is called Voyage of the Sable Venus. That's all coming up after Press Watch. Up next, it's Teresa Mitchell and the news you're not supposed to know.
What are you doing this Thursday at 11 a.m.?